All right, thank you, Harold. So, for one, y'all have already noticed it's been a different kind of presentation today. I'm not going to be using a camera to speak in the sermon today, but I will be using some illustrations and some videos. I definitely gained an appreciation this week preparing for this, for all the work Stephen does and all the practice and skill that he's developed in doing these live streams. It's quite challenging. But God has blessed us with an ability to be able to continue to meet and continue to worship and continue to study. We're going to have a lesson today really about our faith in the existence of God. And I'm going to be taking us through some of the evidence that's there. And it's going to get a little science-y in there. But for all the details that I'm going to be showing, I want you all to not worry about the details of the science. I want you to think about the big picture of what's being shown and think about what the scriptures are saying during this time. So I'm going to switch over here to my lesson notes. So the theme verse here is found in Romans chapter 1, verse 18 through 22. For the wrath of God is revealed from heaven against all ungodliness and unrighteousness of men who suppress the truth in unrighteousness, because what may be known of God is manifest in them, for God has shown it to them. For since the creation of the world, his invisible attributes are clearly seen, being understood by the things that are made, even his eternal power and Godhead, so that they are without excuse. Hold it. There's no excuse. No man, no woman has an excuse to say that there is no God. Where's the evidence? That's what we're going to be studying today. We're going to start with the very beginning of the Bible. And there's a reason for that. The reason that we have in the book of Genesis, the account of creation, is to build that fundamental belief to show the evidence that God exists. The rest of it wouldn't matter if God didn't exist. It'd just be stories made up by men. But this is where we're going to begin. We're going to begin in Genesis chapter 1. And I want you to use your eyes. I produced a lot of video clips here, largely from either NASA or from the BBC One World series, which is a wonderful series of nature documentaries. I love watching these things because just seeing the glory of God's creation is so astounding. But, you know, even if you walk outside, you don't have to be flying over Antarctica, you know, or it's some mountain range or seeing some crazy scene. You can see God's creation in all of its glory right outside in your own front yard. So we're going to begin by reading the first chapter of Genesis. In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth, and the earth was without form and void, and darkness was on the face of the deep, and the Spirit of God was hovering over the face of the waters. Then God said, "Let there be light," and there was light. And God saw the light, that it was good, and he divided the light from the darkness. God called the light day, and he called the darkness night. So the evening and the morning were the first day. Then God said, "Let there be a firmament in the midst of the waters, and let it divide the waters from the waters." Thus God made the firmament and divided the waters which were under the firmament from the waters which were above the firmament, and it was so. And God called the firmament heaven. So the evening and the morning were the second day. Then God said, "Let the waters under the heavens be gathered together into one place, and let the dry land appear." And it was so. And God called the dry land earth, and the gathering together of the waters he called seas. And God saw that it was good. Then God said, "Let the earth bring forth grass, and the herb that yields seed, and the fruit tree that yields fruit according to its kind, whose seed is in itself on the earth." And it was so. And the earth brought forth grass, and the herb that yields seed according to its kind, and the tree that yields fruit, whose seed is in itself according to its kind. And God saw that it was good. So the evening and the morning were the third day. Then God said, "Let there be lights in the firmament of the heavens to divide the day from the night. Let them be for signs and seasons and for days and years. And let them be for lights in the firmament of the heavens to give light on the earth." And it was so. Then God made two great lights, the greater light to rule the day and the lesser light to rule the night. He made the stars also. God set them in the firmament of the heavens to give light on the earth and to rule over the day and over the night and to divide the light from the darkness. And God saw that it was good. So the evening and the morning were the fourth day. Then God said, "Let the waters abound with an abundance of living creatures, and let the birds fly above the earth across the face of the firmament of the heavens." So God created great sea creatures and everything that moves, with which the waters abounded according to their kind, and every winged bird according to its kind. And God saw that it was good. And God blessed them, saying, "Be fruitful and multiply, and fill the waters and the seas, and let birds multiply on the earth." So the evening and the morning were the fifth day. Then God said, "Let the earth bring forth the living creature according to its kind, cattle and creeping thing and beast of the earth, each according to its kind." And it was so. And God made the beast of the earth according to its kind, and cattle according to its kind, and everything that creeps on the earth according to its kind. And God saw that it was good. Then God said, "Let us make man in our image, according to our likeness, and let them have dominion over the fish of the sea, and over the birds of the air, and over the cattle, over all the earth, and over every creeping thing that creeps on the earth." So God created man in his own image. In the image of God, he created him. Male and female, he created them. Then God blessed them and said to them, "Be fruitful and multiply. Fill the earth and subdue it, and have dominion over the fish of the sea, over the birds of the air, and over every living thing that moves on the earth." And God said, "See, I have given you every green herb that yields seed, which is on the face of all the earth, and every tree whose fruit yields seed. To you it shall be for food. Also to every beast of the earth, and to every bird of the air, and to everything that creeps on the earth in which there is life, I have given every green herb for food." And it was so. Then God saw everything that he had made, and indeed it was very good. So the evening and the morning were the sixth day. So what about science? You know, we've read Genesis, and we've read that story. And one of the reasons why I wanted to show all these different video clips was to just show the immensity of the creation that we can see with our own eyes. Every day of our life, it's all right there before us. All the different variety, all the different kinds of animals and plants and trees and land and clouds and stars and everything that's there. But what about science? You know, science is an orderly way to try to understand the universe and everything in it. Initially, scientists were all naturalists in that they studied all aspects of nature around them, trying to understand how things work and where they came from. The scientist is a person with insatiable curiosity for learning about the things and processes of the world and explores that world using hypothesis and experiments. But in science, the credentials of the speaker are often as important or even sometimes more important than the message. So let me briefly review my credentials as a scientist. I'm a scientist. I've had a whole career of science. I'm the son of a scientist. My father was an aerospace physiologist that worked in NASA in the space program. He was part of the team that helped bring the Apollo 13 astronauts home. As a young child in the 60s and 70s, I grew up with science. I devoured everything I could read or watch or study. When I went to college, I earned a bachelor's degree in chemistry, and I studied chemistry, biology, physiology, math, and computer science. I was originally going to go to medical school and do biomedical research, and I was accepted to medical school at Oklahoma University and a concurrent PhD program in physiology, and I thought I was on my way for a life of science. But then my wife's mother died suddenly, and she was so grief-stricken that I realized I couldn't continue along that path, and I switched to computer science and started a career there and built a successful 40-year career working in multiple industries. I had my own startup company. I spent nearly 25 years in IBM research as one of the first distinguished engineers. I retired an expert in computer science and artificial intelligence. Now, why do I say all that? It's not to boast. It's simply to say that I've had a whole life of science. I am a scientist. I've focused on science. I love science. I study science. And I've continued to study microbiology and molecular biology and psychology and physiology and many other branches of science, even to this day. Why do I need to tell you all this? Because there are many in the world that believe that science and a belief in God are incompatible and even contradictory. That if you are truly a scientist, you must be an atheist. And if you believe in God, you cannot truly be a scientist. That's simply not true. There are many great scientists throughout the centuries who believed in God. There are many Nobel Prize-winning scientists who believe in God even today. And there's lots and lots and lots of scientific evidence for the existence of God. And we're going to take a look at some of that now. Probably the best place to start is one of my favorite topics, which is the human body. The human body is an amazing system. It enables us incredible feats of strength and speed and agility and grace. And yet, it self-maintains. It grows. It lives for 80 or 90 years or even 100 years, taking care of itself. It has an incredible nervous system with billions of neurons and trillions of connections that control what we think and how we perceive and how we act in the world. It has a circulatory system with dozens of miles of blood vessels that move food and oxygen and waste products to and from our tissues and maintain that beating heart for all those decades. We have an amazing immune system that protects us constantly from all kinds of attacks. And even when we have some viruses or some other things that our body doesn't know how to handle, if it's given an exposure to it, it can learn. And that's why we take vaccines, is so our body can be exposed and to learn how to fight. And then it knows how to fight for the rest of its life. We have a digestive system that's amazing, that can eat almost anything, and some of us do, and turn it into energy and turn it into the building blocks that we need to maintain this body. We have an amazing skeletal system, a superstructure that's flexible and strong at the same time and so agile and so fast. And then we have a muscle system that's tied all across that skeleton and gives us amazing abilities that grows as needed and shrinks as needed over life. We have a respiratory system that lets us breathe the gases in our atmosphere and take out the things that we need like oxygen and expel the waste products like carbon dioxide. And all these things are integrated and connected. And we have an amazing reproductive system that not only can we live our own life and grow and take care of ourselves, but we can make new copies of ourselves, new people. But what if we go down a little deeper? So with science, not only can you see things, you know, you talk about things that you can see, but there's lots of things in science that we can't see with our eyes. What we have on the screen here are lots of examples of microscopic creatures. One of the things I'm doing in my retirement is I'm spending lots of time with a microscope, and I love looking at these things that are so tiny. There are billions of different kinds of living things in every drop of water and in every teaspoon of dirt. Do you know that if you went out in your yard and you took a teaspoon and you dug up a teaspoon of dirt, that somewhere on the order of a billion living things are alive right there at that moment in that teaspoon? And these are wondrous creatures. Some of them have muscles and brains and hearts, and some of them look little more than little puddles of goo that kind of wander their way around. Lots of these things have propellers and little hairs that propel them around at extreme speeds. They reach out, they grow, they reproduce. They live in every part of the earth, from the hottest deserts to the bottom of the Marianas Trench in the ocean to underneath the Antarctic seas, and in every part of our bodies they live. When you look at these things and you realize that 200 years ago, no one even knew these things existed. And yet, this is part of God's creation that is just as deep and miraculous as everything we see with our eyes. But let's go deeper. In every one of those creatures, and in every living thing, there are cells. And just focus on the letters as I go through them. Letter A here is showing a cell dividing. This is how all cells reproduce. You're getting a copy of the chromosomes. The chromosomes are being separated, and then the two cells pinch apart, and you have a new cell. Those chromosomes in B, This is inside of one chromosome, and the candy stripe things you see there are actually a single strand of DNA, miles of it, that are wrapped around inside of a chromosome. The DNA that holds the program for how to build and maintain your body and give you your abilities. In C, down there in the corner, we see the actual molecular machine that copies DNA. And don't worry about the details. Just look at the machine. This is actually a valid scientific simulation of the molecules that are copying a strand of DNA. Look how it operates. It looks like something you would see in a spinning mill or something that's taking in things on one side and connecting things. Look at how the arms move, and it connects and picks things together and hooks things together. It's working like a machine. This is actually running in real time. This is how fast it works in your body. Did you know that there are billions of cells in your body that need to replace themselves every day? And that there are trillions of these little machines you're looking at right now doing this very act right now in every living thing in the entire of the earth. D shows an example in the middle of this replication where we have a couple of copies of chromosomes as you saw in A. And those little filaments you see there is actually my favorite molecule. It's called tubulin. Tubulin is this amazing girder that's created in the body. And in E, you can see the machine that's actually creating, weaving together this molecule of proteins to create these strands. And then what happens when the cell is dividing is it actually sends these little molecular robots walking down these strands. In F, you can see these. This is actually a scientifically valid model of the actual molecules that are carrying material back and forth along these little highways that are built in every single cell of every single living thing. It's amazing. It looks like a machine that somebody designed. G is a simple molecule that happens to be the gasoline for everything in life. It's called adenosine triphosphate, or ATP. That is actually created in a complex machine that you see in H, I, and J. And if you look at these pictures, especially I, right now, you can see that there are these gears and these machines that are turning cranks, and they're pulling in the chemicals of one kind and performing operations on them like a assembly line, like a factory. And producing them. And this is just to produce the gasoline. This effectively gasoline, it's not. This is to produce the fuel for every single cell in every living thing. This is in your mitochondria, in every cell you have. And then finally, on the last column, we see in K, you saw that little bacterium swimming around there. You know, everything we were seeing that was swimming around in when we were looking at the microbes, if it didn't ooze around like a amoeba, which uses those tubulin molecules we looked at in E and F, or if it didn't walk around, it had legs like the tardigrades you saw there, it actually uses these little propellers. And these propellers are called flagella. And that's what moves around all of those little microscopic animals. The engine that drives the flagellar motor is a miraculous thing. It operates, you can see the pictures of it here in L, M, and N. It operates at 100,000 RPMs. That's faster than a jet engine. And not only can it spin that little propeller at 100,000 RPMs, it can reverse itself in a quarter turn. It can basically go from 100 RPMs in one direction, throw it in reverse, and go 100 RPMs in another direction. These are amazing machines. And you know, science has no idea of how these things are made in any kind of random form like you see in the so-called theory of evolution. But in all of these things that we see here, what I want you to get is not the science, but what you see. You see complex machines. You see machines doing things that we build machines to do in larger scales, like in factories or robots or other things or motors. But this is what's underneath every single cell and the molecules and the atoms that exist there. So what if we go up? We've been going deeper and deeper and smaller and smaller. What if we use science to stare into the heavens? Well, we can see the moon and the stars, and on a dark night, we can see the Milky Way, and we might see a few planets. And with telescopes, with simple telescopes, we can see some of those planets more clearly. But then we set up a space telescope called the Hubble. And the Hubble has provided us with decades of amazing images of galaxies. We see that there are billions of galaxies, each with billions of stars, with billions of solar systems and planets and moons, that it just keeps going on and on. Beautiful structures, immense complexity, immense power and energy, vast distances, and all of these things created above the level of the moon and the sun. I'd like to read a scripture here that I think says it best. Psalm 19. The heavens declare the glory of God, and the firmament shows his handiwork. Day unto day utters speech, and night unto night reveals knowledge. There is no speech nor language where their voice is not heard. Their line has gone out to throughout all the earth, and their words to the end of the world. All right. So let's pull all the evidence together. So what have we seen? We've seen amazing complexity, immense power and distances, beautiful form and structure, amazing individual living things of all different kinds, at tiny levels that we can't see, driven by mechanical motors that are at the level of atoms, and everyone a beautiful individual, perfectly designed, perfectly tuned for its environment, and precious and special to God. So let's go back to our verse. For the wrath of God is revealed from heaven against all ungodliness and unrighteousness of men who suppress the truth and unrighteousness. Because what may be known of God is manifest in them, for God has shown it to them. For since the creation of the world, his invisible attributes are clearly seen, being understood by the things that are made, even his eternal power and Godhead, so that they are without excuse. But unfortunately, the story doesn't end there. Because although they knew God, they have no excuse. They did not glorify him as God, nor were thankful, but became futile in their thoughts, and their foolish hearts were darkened. Professing to be wise, they became fools. You know, when you look at all the evidence, and you look at what you can see with your own eyes, and then what you can see with the eyes of science, with massive space telescopes and amazing microscopes, and everything that we have to examine the world around us and all the things that are there, there's really only one conclusion. This is not the evidence of a billions of years of random chance, of purposeless, meaningless hacks that happen to survive. You don't see that. As an engineer, if you were looking for a system like that, you would see if anything was created at all, and there's plenty of argument to say there wouldn't be, it'd be hobbling around, barely surviving, nothing like we see. The glorious complexity of creation, everything working perfectly as it's designed, intertwined and interconnected. Truly, the psalmist was right. In Psalm 14:1, the fool has said in his heart, there is no God. So that's the lesson for today. I hope it's helped build your faith. You know, every time I walk outside now, I've spent a lot of time in a microscope these last few weeks and starting my retirement, and every time I step in a mud puddle, I'm now thinking of all those billions of creatures that are down there swimming around. You know, they're okay. They do just fine, even with us walking around on top of them. When you see the trees, when you see the flowers, when you see the clouds, when you see the stars, you see all the massive evidence that God exists. God is sitting there going, I'm here. You have no excuse. So what are you going to do about it? Now, this hasn't been a gospel sermon in the sense of talking about sin and salvation and the good news of Jesus Christ. But you know what? If you don't believe in God, none of that makes any sense to you. But if you do believe that God exists, if you have not turned your back on the immense evidence, the infinity of evidence for the existence of God, then you should seek that God. He loves you. He created you to have a relationship with him. He knows you sin. He knows you fall short. That's why he created a way for us to be saved. That's why he sent his son to live a sinless life and to die on that cross in our place. You can have that relationship with God, with the creator of the whole universe who cares so much for you in all that vast creation that he sent his only son to die for you. You can have that relationship with God. If you need to understand what you've got to do to be saved, the Bible's clear. You need to believe that Jesus is the Son of God. You need to be willing to confess that before men. You need to repent of your sin and your willfulness and your rebellion, to turn away from it and to say, I don't want to live my way anymore. I want to live God's way. And then you need to be baptized. You need to be born again of the water and the Spirit. And then you need to walk in that new life and walk in the light all the way to the end, all the way to the end of this life, to the judgment day and to eternity with God. You know, one of the most exciting things about heaven for me, besides getting there, is that verse that says, and earth and heaven fled away, and there was no more place for them. And God said, behold, I create all things new. I want to be there. I want to watch that. I want to spend millions of years exploring and understanding the amazing proofs of God's existence in his creation. And I hope you do too. If you have any needs, I know that, you know, we're online and everything's kind of weird. Contact us. You can contact us via Facebook. You can contact us via phone. Whatever works, let us help you. If you need to obey the gospel, we'll help you do that. If you need to repent of your sins, we can help you get back on track with God. If you have any needs, come and let us know as we sing this song.